Thank you. I'm going to start by acknowledging the contributions from many other people on our team and others in an advisory board and science advisors. My co-authors include others from Duke University and Chuck Rice from Kansas State University and Karen Hogan-Kosra from the province of Alberta. And we've relied heavily on our advisory board and science advisors, who include researchers and others from a wide range of institutions, who all have many years of experience in carbon and interactions with greenhouse gases in agriculture. This project is part of the Technical Working Group for Agricultural Greenhouse Gases, which is supported by the Packard Foundation, with the goal of compiling the technical and scientific background information needed for the implementation of high-quality greenhouse gas mitigation in agricultural land management. In the IPCC report of 2008, Smith et al. Acknowledged that land management in agriculture has a significant potential to mitigate greenhouse gases. This number of 230 million tons of CO2 equivalents is approximately 3.3% of total greenhouse gas emissions in the United States. So we're looking at a number of different policy or market options that might be incorporating and utilizing agricultural greenhouse gas mitigation, where we might have private or voluntary greenhouse gas mitigation markets, cap and trade legislation with voluntary offsets that could then lead into a market, or incentive programs that mitigate, that have a goal of mitigating greenhouse gases, so something through the USDA or other institutions within government. And also, as was mentioned by someone else, the corporate-driven supply chain requirements that are coming into greater light and are becoming quite interesting over the last little while. So how do we move from the science to the application? And that's what our project is trying to do. And this includes reducing emissions on a field scale or other emissions, and also including the sequestration of soil carbon. And even though nitrous oxide emissions are some of the highest emissions in agricultural land management, soil carbon sequestration has some of the highest potential for mitigation. So in this process, we need to ensure that we have high quality, high integrity mitigation, and so ensuring that the environmental benefits are achieved so that those people who are buying or the public that is paying for incentives is actually getting what they paid for. And also ensuring that farmers are fairly compensated for what they have, for the changes that they've made and the provision of the environmental services that they have provided. So we start with three different research questions, starting with what kind of potential is there in farmland management activities to mitigate greenhouse gases? And secondly, following that, how do the technical and economic and social and other environmental factors modify this potential? Because we can't necessarily say that biophysical potential leads directly to implementation. And then what are some of the key knowledge gaps out there that we're seeing have, if we can address them, they would significantly reduce some of the uncertainty that we're facing and also speed some of the progress. So our roadmaps to prioritization started, we started with a list of over 40 different agricultural land management activities, and if a program developer or a project developer is faced with this long list, how do they know where to start? And these different activities were divided into cropland management, grazing land management, and different land use changes. And so in order to help prioritize these sort of activities and get an idea of which ones would be best to start to direct our limited resources to, we started with the synthesis of the literature and set up a database that included data from reviews and from individual field and lab studies, with a focus on the United States and filling in some of the blanks with international data as we needed to do so. Of all of these, for all of these different activities, we end up with three different greenhouse gas impact categories. First off, this impact on soil carbon and the changes in soil carbon due to the implementation of an activity, the changes in land emissions, nitrous oxide and methane being the primary ones, and also the impact on upstream and process. And this is something that is important if we're looking at the whole farm budget, as Keith was talking about, when we might look at changes in fuel or changes in energy in other upstream, sort of something like fertilizer production. taking this in order to get a national idea of what the potential is of each of these practices, we made a weighted average by the number of comparisons that were available in each study, and then also weighted it by region if the data was sufficient in order to be able to do that, and then made an estimate of the applicable land area for implementation within the country, and identified some of the key issues that affected the greenhouse gas impacts of each of these activities. So here's just a segment of some of this synthesis of information that we pulled together. I'm just going to go over a few of them, starting with no-till. The implementation of no-till from conventional tillage has potential to, on average in the United States, have a positive soil sequestration value of just over 1 ton of carbon dioxide equivalents per hectare per year. And then there's a significant range. So that's the numbers here below that show that we have a range from negative impacts on soil carbon to significantly higher impacts on soil carbon. And the nitrous oxide emissions, in some cases we have elevated nitrous oxide emissions that do offset any soil carbon benefits, but in other cases the nitrous oxide emissions do show that there is some mitigation as well that happens in some no-till situations. Reduction in fuel use due to less field operations and is what's counted in the upstream and process. And then we end up with a net impact here in the fourth column and the fifth column showing the maximum area that coming from expert opinion, from the literature, and from surveys of what sort of crop practices are there. So I'm just going to go over a couple others. The winter cover crops having a potential of almost the same as no-till, but a significantly high range, and more often a positive impact on N2O emissions, and also a significant decrease in emissions due to upstream and process, partly because the winter cover crops are impacting the requirement for nitrogen fertilizer, especially if we're looking at leguminous winter cover crops. So it has a somewhat higher net impact, but not an extremely high area of possible implementation. And this may be, this is definitely a maximum of achievable values there. And if we look at something like reducing nitrogen fertilizer, we have numbers that are similar to what others have shown here today, and a high implementation area. Rangeland management, which is often reducing the stocking density, so we have some leakage issues that might have to be considered in rangeland management, but also some significant potential for soil carbon, so if we can deal with the leakage and not have to reduce by too much or somehow address that, then we could have some potential in rangeland management as well. So in order to determine whether we have high confidence in these numbers and whether these activities do actually, whether these numbers are something that we feel comfortable then extending into the implementation, we need to get some idea of the how many comparisons there are and the regional distribution of this information, and also highlight where some of the research is missing. And I'm just showing this for four of the different activities where we wanted to just get an idea of how many valid comparisons there were within the literature and where, how many comparisons contributed to the estimate of average mitigation potential. And for example, we have no-till where we have almost 500 different comparisons in the field and representation from all the different U.S. regions with the best data available for the Southeast and the Great Plains and the Corn Belt. And we move on through some of these other activities, winter cover crops, reducing nitrogen fertilizer rate, and changing nitrogen source to a slow release. We have reducing total amounts of numbers of comparisons and somewhat less regional distribution of the data as well. So in order to supplement that information, we are currently doing a survey of scientific certainty of some of the experts, including many of you in this room, and trying to get another qualitative or as quantitative as possible assessment of what the potential is for what the certainty is there. So moving from bio, when we have a biophysical potential, you don't always achieve a full economic potential, and we need to have a decision process that assesses whether activities are mutually exclusive, and then whether you have land use competition as a result, and then assess cost versus benefits. If activities can be applied in the same land area, then do they have interaction effects, or can you add them together, the total mitigation potential? So we're using land use competition and cost and an optimization model, the FASM model, and doing full greenhouse gas accounting, and then also qualitatively considering some of the other factors that affect feasibility. And so we end up with economic potential at different prices, and you can see that the potential, for example, of changing tillage practices increases as the price increases, so we have greater incentive going to farmers to make a change in practices, and we end up with higher mitigation. So some of the significant gaps and uncertainties, I'll just point out a couple of them. That one of them that we're considering in the soil carbon is how does the depth of soil sampling affect the true value of the change in soil organic carbon with no-till? And we have some recent studies that we're looking at and trying to get a pretty get a general assessment of that. And that work isn't completed yet. And then what are some of the baseline rates of all these different activities? And that's the baseline information is something that seems to be not available in a lot of cases. And that's a challenge that we're facing. So thank you. Yes, Cliff.
In the table in mitigation, you show the reduction of fertilizer rate having no impact on soil carbon. Long term, I think we need to reevaluate that.
If there's an impact,
that is based on.
And mostly because of the change in yield?
The impacts of reducing biomass production are critical.
Yeah, well, I think that. What the assumption in that was, and the assumption in the literature that we used to summarize that decrease in fertilizer use, was that this decrease in fertilizer use could be achieved without a significant decrease in yield. So the biomass production, hopefully, wouldn't be. That was the level that we were looking at, and I.
On the assumption that there's some nitrogen surplus application.
Exactly, and that's. A discussion that's currently happening as to whether that's even possible to do and how you can do that and what sort of best management practices would have to be implemented in order for that to happen.